From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Joe Palca reporting. Surprising results in Turkish election. Surprising victory of President Recep Tayyip Erdogan's AKP party in Sunday's general election has ended months of political uncertainty. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
Supporters of the AKP party celebrated into the early hours of the morning on the streets of Istanbul. Speaking Sunday, Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu gave a unifying message.
Vatandaşlarıma siyasetin normalleştiği.
He said, let's roll up our sleeves and create a new Turkey in which politics is normalized, in which people greet one another peacefully. The shock victory, which confounded all of the country's opinion polls, was welcomed by the financial markets, with the Turkish lira surging in value as news broke about the result, which ended months of political uncertainty after June's inconclusive election. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
Monday, the president gave a defiant message saying the world must respect the result. The UN Security Council condemned the Somali militant group Al-Shabaab's attack on Sunday on a Mogadishu hotel that left at least 12 people dead. The council praised the response by Somalia's army, which killed all of the attackers and highlighted terrorism in all its forms and manifestations as one of the most serious threats to global peace. South Korean President Park Geun-hye and Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe have agreed to quickly resolve a decades-long dispute over Korean women forced to serve as sex slaves during Japan's brutal occupation of the Korean Peninsula in the first half of the 20th century. The two leaders made the promise during a bilateral summit in Seoul today, their first since Mr. Abe took office in 2012 and Mr. Park in 2013. This is VOA News. Millions of Nigerian children don't attend school, in part because their parents can't afford it. One Street is trying to change that by abolishing fees. Chris Stein reports with Ibrahima Yakubu in Kaduna.
In theory, public primary school education in Nigeria is free. But in practice, public schools charge for uniforms, books, and meals. Those fees are often the equivalent of less than $25, but even that is too much for some families. However, the governor of Kaduna State in northern Nigeria says the state will now cover the cost of those necessities for students in public primary and junior secondary schools. Samuel Aruan is a spokesman for the state government.
With this free education, we have saved Kaduna State parents whose children attend public school of over 3 billion naira annually.
Nigeria is home to the world's largest population of out-of-school children, according to the United Nations Children's Fund. Chris Stein for VOA News, Accra.
UNICEF estimates that about 10.5 million children were out of school in 2012 due to a combination of poverty, cultural traditions, and in some parts of the country, conflict. An airline official says only external factors could have caused the disintegration of a Russian passenger jet that crashed in Egypt. Alexander Smirnov, he's the director of the flights for MetroJet, said today in Moscow that there were no technical failures that could lead to the plane breaking up in the air. According to Mr. Smirnov, the plane wasn't flying, it was falling, and the crew simply lost control for the reason that there was not one attempt to get in contact and report on the accident situation as it was occurring. Mr. Smirnov, while ruling out technical and human error as the cause of the crash, also stressed the importance of waiting for the findings of the investigation into the crash. The London-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights and the Islamic State both claim that ISIS fighters have captured the Syrian town of Mahin in central Homs province, marking a new advance into the western part of the country. University of San Francisco Middle East expert Stephen Zunis spoke with VOA about this development and the region affected.
It's pretty well populated and it's diverse, includes a fairly large Christian population as well. This is far beyond the areas in the north and the northeast they have controlled previously, and it is definitely an indication that despite a few setbacks here and there, their area of control is growing.
The White House today says that U.S. Special Operations troops sent to Syria will not be there to engage in raids or combat. For more on this story, visit our website at voanews.com. Joe Palca reporting from Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Thank you. Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yalke in Washington. Ahead, a member of an aviation consultancy firm speaks about the Russian plane crash in Egypt. Reaction to a changing U.S. strategy in Syria. We get an update on the war on deadly Ebola.
I don't know if it's a win and lose situation. We're trying to keep up.
And hear about a nasty rumor about a pair of superstar singers. It's right here on The Voice of America. A Russian investigator said... A Russian investigator says MetroJet Airbus A321, which crashed more than 20 minutes after takeoff Saturday from Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt to St. Petersburg, broke up in midair after reaching about 9,400 meters in altitude. But Viktor Soroshenko of the Intergovernmental Aviation Committee cautioned it is too early to draw any conclusions. My colleague Victor Beatty is following all this and joins me here in the studio. Welcome, Victor.
Hello, Susan. Well, all 224 people on board Flight 9268, most of them Russian tourists, were killed in that early Saturday crash. Most of the bodies of the victims have now been returned to Russia. Debris is scattered over some 16 square kilometers of Egypt's Sinai Peninsula. All A321s in MetroJet's fleet have been grounded until the reason for the crash becomes clear. The two black box recorders, which contain vital flight data and cockpit voice recordings, are being examined by investigators. Islamic State-affiliated militants in Sinai have claimed responsibility for downing the aircraft. Scott Hamilton, editor of News and Comments of the Seattle-based aviation consultancy Liam Company, discussed with me what the Russian investigator might mean about the aircraft breaking apart in mid-flight.
There's either going to be a catastrophic structural failure or mechanical failure, or perhaps a bomb. It is very, very rare to have an airplane break up at cruise altitude. Now, it's also been reported that in 2001, it had major damage from a tail strike on takeoff or landing. I'm not sure which, in Cairo. So obviously investigators are going to really pay close attention to that as well.
The plane apparently lost contact with air traffic control 23 minutes after takeoff. About what altitude might it be at that point?
I think the reports were that it was around 31,000 feet.
And is it possible that something fired from the ground could bring an aircraft down at that height?
Well, according to the news reports, the ISIS didn't have any missiles that could go above 20,000 feet or thereabouts. That still doesn't rule out the possibility of a bomb that was planted on the airplane. And obviously with this tail strike report, that's going to be a particular area of focus. But with the flight data and cockpit voice recorders recovered, there should be some indication really almost as soon as they have the investigators have a chance to analyze just what those tell you.
Does the fact that the debris is scattered a certain way suggest that it might be a bomb on board, and would there be residue on the aircraft fragments?
Well, there would be residue on the aircraft fragments. I certainly haven't seen enough information coming out of Egypt yet as to indicate how the debris was scattered. It was apparently scattered over a 7-mile area, which obviously does indicate an in-flight breakup. And according to the news reports, the tail section was found some distance from the main wreckage, which suggests that the tail section separated from the airplane. Again, was it something having to do with a structural issue? Was it something having to do with a bomb? We just don't know at this point.
When that Malaysian jetliner was downed over Ukraine, of course, it turned out to be a missile of some sort that was fired from the ground. Would there be any possible similarity between this incident and that one?
Well, certainly not if the missiles in ISIS control could not go above 20,000 feet and the plane was at 31,000 feet. That would suggest that there was something else at work here.
What do you make of several airliners, particularly Gulf carriers, who are avoiding the Sinai until the cause is determined?
I think that's just a prudence, given that it is a combat zone of sorts. They don't want to have a repeat of the Malaysian MH17 shoot down over Ukraine.
Is airspace worldwide still fairly wide open, or does it become more restricted when you have incidents like this?
It becomes more restrictive when you're over combat zones, and there's a lot of restriction over the Middle East right now because of, obviously, all the combat that's going on there. Airspace is restricted over North Korea. You know, airlines aren't allowed to fly over North Korea, even though that's a more direct route, say, from Tokyo to Beijing. They have to go down and around South Korea to go into Beijing. So there are airspace restrictions, but anytime you have combat, there's additional restriction.
The A321 is a twin-engine, medium-hull aircraft that's been in service since 1994, with over 1,100 of the aircraft operating today worldwide.
Thank you, Victor, for that report.
All right, Susan.
Saturday's crash is still generating lots of attention on social media. Michael Lippin is here with more on that. Michael, what are the main tweet hashtags related to this crash?
Hi, Susan. Well, if you want to find tweets about the crash, I'd recommend searching for the hashtag 7K9268. That was the flight number of the crash plane, and it's the most widely used Twitter hashtag that I've seen so far. The Topsy Analytics website shows that 7K9268 has been mentioned in 23,000 tweets in the last 24 hours. Other hashtags that you can search for are hashtag A321. That's the model of the Airbus plane involved in the crash. You can also look for hashtag Metrojet, the English name of the airline, as well as its Russian name, hashtag Kogalymavia.
What have people been tweeting about those hashtags?
Well, in the last few hours, you can find a lot of images of the crash site in Sinai being posted, including, you know, aerial video and still photos taken from the ground. You've also got a lot of conflicting information about what may have brought down the plane, with the Russian airline saying one thing and Russian officials saying another. Susan?
Well, thank you, Michael. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
A group of Canadian researchers have developed a quick and inexpensive way to test for hepatitis B and male infertility. They say that their new paper-based DNA test could especially be helpful in diagnosing these unrelated but serious conditions in developing nations. Writing in the Journal of the American Chemical Society, the researchers say that within 10 minutes, their new test can detect an early-stage hepatitis B infection in a patient's blood serum. This is something that would give medical professionals valuable time to develop a proper treatment plan before the infection can spread. The same test can also be used to predict male fertility by checking the DNA integrity of sperm as precisely as current proven testing methods. The researchers say that their new diagnostic test can be made from materials that cost less than $1 per device. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
The Obama administration has announced for the first time it will deploy special forces in Syria to support local fighters battling Islamic State. The announcement prompted debate on the presidential campaign trail. Republican Senator Marco Rubio said Islamic State extremists must be confronted. But Rubio said he does not favor a massive U.S. military deployment to fight the Islamic State directly. Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders said he fears a deployment of up to 50 troops in Syria could be just the beginning of a larger commitment. Fellow Democrat Hillary Clinton's campaign issued a statement saying Clinton sees merit in a limited deployment to Syria, but opposes a larger ground war in the Middle East. The White House stressed a train and assist role for special forces sent to Syria, not a combat mission. International Edition's Mohammed El-Shenawy spoke with David DeRoche, associate professor at the National Defense University, about the new U.S. strategy in Syria. Welcome, Mohammed. Critics are saying that sending special forces to Syria is a departure from President Obama's commitment not to put U.S. boots on the ground.
According to the military expert I talked to, boots on the ground refer to conventional ground combat operations. But a raid like the one that special forces helped Iraqi forces to free hostages is what the administration intends to use special forces to guide local fighters in Syria against the Islamic State group.
The administration is walking a very fine line. They don't want to have the sort of commitment in or the sort of presence in Syria that we have in Afghanistan and had in Iraq. But at the same time, they realize that the current or the plan that we had been, the strategy we had been pursuing just isn't likely to produce the results we want. So I think though that there's not a huge difference of substance. It's not going to be an Afghan or an Iraq-like commitment. It's going to be something much, much smaller.
On the other hand, Syrian opposition leaders were disappointed that this strategy is a departure from U.S. assistance to the so-called moderate Syrian opposition that is focused on fighting President Assad.
Well, the U.S. train and equip program that failed was designed initially to prepare fighters to battle the Islamic State group and not Assad. However, the United States realized that for a more effective impact on the battlefield, the U.S. aid should go to fighters already battling ISIS on the ground, as Professor Darush explains.
So I think there's a recognition that the United States is going to deal with, is going to arm some people that in the past we might have considered to be not desirable allies, you know, whether they're too extreme or, you know, that there was some sort of problem with them. And now we're somewhat lowering our standards in favor of more combat effectiveness. It's a recognition that the strategy we had been pursuing was not going to achieve our goals. And so we're going to perhaps sacrifice some of the standards we had been hoping for in favor of gaining increased combat effectiveness in Syria.
Professor Darush said that the U.S. is still reluctant to establish a safe zone or pose a no-fly zone in Syria for a very good reason. Both options require a major military commitment, and with Russian military intervention in Syria, it becomes a more distant possibility.
Mohammed, what is the most likely scenario for a political transition in Syria following the expanded international conference in Vienna?
Well, according to Professor Darush, the losses of Russia and Iran in Syria could define the most likely scenario there.
It really depends on how the parties see their position and what they see as their chances of achieving their goals. And I really don't know whether Iran thinks it can win and have a reinvigorated Bashar al-Assad regime controlling all of Syria, or whether Iran sees this as a quagmire and it's in their interests to come to a negotiated settlement that, you know, perhaps does not include Bashar al-Assad. If the latter is the case, then we stand a greater chance of a negotiated settlement. But the intervention of Russia and the ground intervention of Iran, which hasn't been as publicized, makes the achievement of the Syrian opposition's goals and the West's goals in Syria much less likely.
Thank you, Mohammed, for this analysis.
Thank you, Sue, for having me.
Coming up on International Edition, meet a foot soldier in the war against Ebola. And the rumor mill once again caused trouble in the music world. The World Health Organization reports three new confirmed cases of the disease Ebola in Guinea in the week ending October 18th. The WHO says since the beginning of the current Ebola outbreak, there have been a total of 28,476 reported cases in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, with 11,298 reported deaths to that date. Dr. John Dye is the chief of the United States Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases Viral Immunology Branch, and he's been involved in the development of biovirus vaccines and therapeutics. And he joins us now on the line. Welcome, doctor.
How are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Excellent.
Say, first of all, can you give us an update on the war against Ebola? Are you winning?
I don't know if it's a win and lose situation. We're trying to keep up. With this current outbreak in Western Africa, in two of the countries, they haven't had a reported case in at least a month, so that's a great sign. There are still cases in Guinea, and we're still battling, let's just put it that way.
Well, how are you approaching your research? What are you looking into?
So I work at the United States Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases, which is USAMRID, and that's a mouthful, I know. And for the last several decades, and myself for the last decade, we've been looking at developing vaccines and treatments for Ebola virus and other pathogens of interest that could potentially cause pandemics. So in the past 10 years, we've developed multiple vaccines that we have taken through small animal models and moved them into monkeys, seen protection, and now some of those vaccines that we've been developing at USAMRIID and testing are actually being assessed in Western Africa. So there are multiple vaccines that are currently in West Africa being implemented by Merck and Janssen to see if there is any efficacy. On top of that, we've also been trying to develop therapeutics, monoclonal antibodies, and drugs to actually combat the virus, which are currently being investigated as well. So there's a lot going on right now with the therapeutic and vaccine front with Ebola.
So for the layman, does that mean we're pretty close maybe to finding something to help here?
I think we are close. I think we have things in our cabinet that could be effective. The thing about this outbreak is, as you just mentioned, the number of people that were infected and the number of people that succumbed to the disease. Ebola has been around since it's been around long before 1976, but we first learned about it in 1976. And prior to this outbreak of Ebola, there's only been about 20 outbreaks that have occurred. And we're talking about a total of 3,000 to 5,000 people that have been infected. So we haven't had a lot of people to look at to see if vaccines or treatments actually would be efficacious. So a silver lining, if you want to look at it that way, from this outbreak is we have a lot of people to look at. We have a large number of people that were infected and survived. So we actually have a way of trying to assess whether these vaccines or therapeutics work.
Well, thank you very much, Doctor, for taking your time to speak with us today. I appreciate it, and good luck with your work.
Thank you very much, ma'am.
Dr. John Dye is featured in the National Geographic show Breakthrough, which premiered on Sunday, November the 1st, and will be running for several weeks. This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
I'm Millar Sagan, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
A new book about hip-hop mogul Jay-Z and his wife Beyoncé, Becoming Beyoncé, The Untold Story, has been fueling the rumor mill with the tales of an alleged romance between Jay-Z and singer Rihanna. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee about how the rumor got started and some of its consequences.
So this gentleman by the name of Jonathan Hay was hired by the producer of Rihanna's first single, Pawn the Replay, to do some work, some promotion work, essentially. And so after this book was released, and inside the book there was some speculation, or it implied that this rumor was made up by a publicist, this gentleman comes forward and says, well, actually, yeah, that's true. I made it up hoping that it would generate some publicity for the song. I just kind of threw it out there to see whether or not it would stick. And by golly, it stuck. So much so that Beyoncé and Jay-Z, and we did not know this at the time, but separated for a year back in 2005, as a result of this allegation.
Now, we should say that Rihanna's representatives, her legal team, and Veda Nobles, who wrote the Pawn the Replay, said, I didn't hire this guy. He wasn't a publicist. He presented himself to me as something, but they're saying, Rihanna's people are saying, this guy was not officially representing her at all.
No, apparently the producer and the publicist had a couple of conversations, and sometimes this happens in the music industry. You meet someone at a party, they say, hey, I can help you. You say, okay, sure, let me know what you can do. And then they go do things to sort of prove that they have the juice, if you will, to make things happen. And so it sounds to me like that's what this is. And what makes the story even more interesting is that this guy now has an artist and he's promoting a couple of his own songs, which he's hoping to have released on Jay-Z's Tidal platform. So this is going to be really complicated for him if Jay-Z and or Beyonce decide to comment on this or decide to do something about it, which they have not.
Okay, now, still speaking of Jay-Z and Rihanna, Rihanna is reported to have inked a $25 million deal with Samsung. And Jay-Z's involved in that, too, is he not?
Right. Now, we may remember that Jay-Z had a huge deal with Samsung to release his Holy Grail album, Magna Carta Holy Grail album, via their platform. Well, it sounds like, and we don't have all of the details now, but it sounds like Rihanna is going to do something very similar because Samsung has a new platform that's, I guess, kind of trying to compete with Apple Music, and it's called Milk Music, actually, and it's a radio service. So what I think may be happening here is Rihanna may have agreed to allow Samsung to release this new album that we've been waiting for forever and ever called Auntie. And it would be a great thing for Samsung because, again, it's a highly anticipated album. And she wants to do something interesting for the release. So this would be it, I think.
All right. If you have any comments, you can send a tweet to Shauna at VOA Lady DJ. You can also log on to our website, voanews.com.
We would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE and visit our website at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On November 8th, the citizens of Burma will go to the polls. Over 6,000 candidates are vying for 1,171 parliamentary seats. It is the greatest test yet of the reforms launched by President Thein Sein and the ruling regime 4 years ago. Election campaigning began on September 8th, and for the first time in memory, no one knows who will win. That's a far cry from the last openly contested general election in 1990, when the opposition National League for Democracy won by a landslide, but the results were never recognized by the sitting government. Nonetheless, problems remain. First, in the words of Assistant Secretary for East Asian and Pacific Affairs Daniel Russell, we all recognize that the political playing field in Burma is not yet an even one. A number of obstacles are built into the system, preventing a truly democratic process. For example, the Burmese constitution reserves 25% of parliamentary seats and key cabinet posts for the military. Constitutional restrictions prevent the most prominent opposition politician, Aung San Suu Kyi, from running for president. And legislative restrictions and discrimination prevent some minority ethnic or religious groups from participating as candidates or voters. During a recent visit to Burma, Deputy National Security Advisor Ben Rhodes also raised concerns about religion being used as a tool of division during the election period. He noted to the press in Rangoon, "We see a risk of religious expression being inconsistent with a constitution that separates religion and politics. And of course, when that happens, ultimately it can pose a danger to religious minorities." These elections will be vitally important for the U.S. relationship with Burma. The conduct and results of these elections will fundamentally shape our engagement with the Burmese government in 2016 and beyond, said Assistant Secretary Russell. Our ability to assist the new Burmese government, let alone to look at relaxation of sanctions, will depend on our assessment of the integrity of the overall process. So far, the government of Burma has made a strong effort to improve the administration and transparency of the electoral process. To reinforce this effort, the United States is providing more than $18 million in assistance to conduct the elections. The 2015 elections are an important milestone in Burma's political transition away from dictatorship. But what will be even more critical is that the next government solidifies the political and social gains made and continues to push for additional reform, said Assistant Secretary Russell. The government and people of Burma have an opportunity in this election to demonstrate their commitment to building democratic institutions and processes. If the elections are credible, they can make a significant step forward.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, Africa. This is Let's Talk. It's the show where we take a lighthearted look at everyday life, the day-to-day issues you care about. I'm your host, Sunday Shamari, in Washington. Tonight, Tancourt.
And he actually had his coat made to actually turn his coat. In both ways, because he owned some land, and the land was actually in the middle of two wars.
But going back to the growth mentality, let's say, that doesn't have to be limited with science or any other industry, is that even in friendship or life, if you have a growth mentality, you're not afraid to be correct.
Well, according to dictionary.com, Tancourt is a person who changes to the opposite party or faction, reverses principles, or a renegade, or if you like, a traitor. So, what do you do when this happens to you, or when you meet someone like this? Well, if your friends decide to do that, what can you do? Well, tonight on Let's Talk, we'll explore this, of course, in our usual light-hearted manner, so please stay tuned. Well, first, welcome to the show, my colleagues in the house, Kathy Stanley. Welcome aboard.
Thank you, Sunday. Good to be here again.
Okay. And Alvin Singano, all the way from Central Africa. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. It's a pleasure to be back.
All right. Tancourt is tonight's topic here on Let's Talk. Well, how do you deal with a Tancourt? I spoke to a colleague, Salim, and I wanted to know her take.
You know what? I got to be honest.
Okay.
I did not know what exactly that term embodied until we had this discussion.
You're not alone in that one. Trust me. Even the whole panel didn't know about this either. Mm-hmm. Okay. One guy told me, you know what? Someone to change, to go against another group could be a good thing too. People will call that person, oh, this guy is bad, a Tancourt, he betrayed us and all that. But it's not always a bad thing.
It really is not.
Now, yeah, can you tell me why you think so?
Here's why I think that.
Okay.
Okay, I think there are two frame of minds in our world. Okay. I think that there's a growth mentality and there's a fixed mentality.
Okay.
And so what that means is growth mentality is you always approach things in a way that you don't think something is absolute. Like, even science is not absolute. Mm. A vaccine or a drug or some sort of pill that was invented or found or discovered at some point might be changed at another point. Or maybe in time, studies or scientific research might find something different that would benefit the world or the person or the people that are using it. And so that might be able to, I mean, the notion that that is a set thing and it's absolute is such a wrong notion to have, because changes, right?
Things do change, yeah.
Science changes. Science, I'm just
changes
giving one example as example. Science.
Okay.
But going back to the growth mentality, let's say, that doesn't have to do with science or that doesn't have to be limited with science or any other industry, is that even in friendship or life, you know, if you have a growth mentality, you're not afraid to be correct.
You look like a very outspoken person, so don't you maybe think of running for office at some point?
No, I really, truly believe that there is a purpose in journalism. Okay. I really think that my role in life is to advocate for the principles of what journalism can do.
And are you ready to be called a tankot if that comes in, for those principles you believe in?
Maybe I would have a eureka moment. Uh-huh. This is such a great segue you're bringing up. Uh-huh. I didn't know that was going to turn on me.
But it did.
It did. It just did. Maybe I'll become a diplomat. I don't know. And in fact, because the journalists deal with a lot of information, and information is power, as we know, in any industry, be it military, be it without information, you can't really function or do the right, take the right decisions in leadership as well. So,
and well said. Looking forward for your candidacy.
What about you? Are you thinking about you're not thinking about becoming?
No, I'm good with journalism. Running. I think I can make a very good contribution to my people by being behind the microphone. So
you're not going to run for office, is that what you're saying? Are you really not running for office?
No, I won't run for office.
This is on the record.
This is on
the
record.
What happens if you change your mind?
You can call me at Tancourt. Thank you, Salim. This is Let's Talk, and we're discussing Tancourt. Okay, back to the studio. So, everybody I spoke to today said, I've never heard of this word. Where did this word come from anyway? So originally, when I digged, it said a person who tried to hide the badge of his party or a leader was a tankot. This is because the expression came from changing principles or changing a party. And this is recorded back in the 1560s.
Wow. No wonder we've never heard of it, right?
Right. Okay, and that is according to the dictionary.com. But of course, you can hear it in some places. It was used when you remember Colin Powell, the general, when he decided to endorse Barack Obama.
Okay.
Yes, some people called him a tankot. Because he's a Republican, he went to endorse a Democrat, and it was like, wow, how can he do this? He's a tankot. So, hey, that's what people did. But anyway, when this happens to you, what do you do? Do you think this person is a bad human being, you cannot deal with him anymore? All things happen in life. I don't know. You tell me. Kathy Stanley, you're a woman, and from a woman's perspective, could be different. Tell me something about this.
I think it is something that just happens in life.
Okay.
Now, I want to kind of understand the term a little bit more.
Okay.
Turn coat. Does it mean that you're playing both sides? So say if you're one party, you want to switch over to another party. Does that mean you hide yourself from that one party to your advantage, and then you turn back to that party? Or does it mean you just turn your back and you're a traitor altogether?
You just turn.
Is that what that means?
That what means. You just decided, you know what? I am going to turn around, and this court is turning on the other side from A to B.
And it happens. People change their mind.
Okay.
But I did read that, you know, in the early.
Through.
Yeah, you know I did a little research.
That's good.
But it did say that it was a duke, and he actually had his coat made to actually turn his coat. In both ways, because he owned some land, and the land was actually in the middle of two wars. Did you realize that?
Mm-mm.
The French and the Saxon.
Okay.
And so when they were on his land, he would turn his coat. If it was the French side, he would turn his coat to the white side.
Wow.
And if it was the Saxon side, then he would change his coat to the blue side.
So he's both sides.
So that's what I mean.
He was
both sides.
I feel you.
So that's why I was wondering. Is it
just one way or just go all
exactly.
over? So if that is the case, would you think that it would be a clever thing to do, a good thing to do, or just, as you say, it's life? I don't know.
Well, some people say it's not a good thing to do, right? From what I understand, it's not a good thing to do.
Okay.
Because you're a traitor.
Uh-huh.
And who wants to be called a traitor?
Nobody.
But yet, sometimes you change your mind, right?
Yeah, people do change their mind.
People do change their mind.
And you can't stop them.
And you can't stop them.
That's right. What about you, Alvin Singano?
I think from my perspective, it's, people grow, change perspectives, you know, evolve, outgrow certain relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So it's okay if someone changes, you know. I don't think it's a bad thing if you change your mind on the subject or mm-hmm. change political parties. I think it's okay. It's acceptable.
And when you say evolve, you reminded me of something, you know. You remember during the election time when President Obama was in an interview, and this was the time they were talking about relationships, and they spoke about gay relationship. And he said, I've evolved. Changed his mind. I said, you know what? I've evolved, I think.
I like that term. Yeah. Right. No, I like that term. Right? Because it is true. You do change your mind.
Sometimes you can't do that, right?
Why is that a bad thing?
Exactly.
Right. It doesn't have to be a bad thing.
Doesn't have to
it's
be
actually
a bad
healthy.
Thing.
It's good. If you don't change, that means maybe something isn't right, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you're playing both sides, it's
then that's right, where, right. Like the king that was
exactly.
doing.
That's no, a bad.
Hey,
thing.
That's not a bad thing. That right. king was protecting. Was, his,
that's
his
right.
Land.
His land.
Right.
Exactly.
Land.
Exactly.
That's,
right.
That's, the king was trying to protect his land and trying to protect himself. So maybe that's the business side of you perspective. Maybe
that's true. Playing both sides. So true.
So true.
Wow, yeah. It's hard to do that now. Yeah. Well. We'll talk about it. This is Let's Talk, and we are discussing Turncourt. For those of you just joining us, this is Let's Talk, a program of the Voice of America's Africa Service. It comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on the Africa Service of the Voice of America. Now, if something plays on both sides, it can be tough, it can be good, it can be bad. As you say, and sometimes who knows what you're trying to do, but you have to be very, very smart. Okay, I spoke to my colleague Caleb, and I wanted to know his take.
The term Turncourt, is mostly synonymous with a regime change in a country.
Okay.
Which is very interesting because you'll see a country that generally, let's say, is capitalist. For example, let's throw in Bernie Sanders.
Okay.
For the first time in American history, we're having a socialist, leading the Democratic ticket. He's had the most donations in the quickest amount of time. So if this guy gets elected, we're witnessing a Turncourt, a shift in the paradigm of the United States consciousness, becoming more socialist and accepting it. So if that new person runs, most likely, if the Turncourt doesn't exist, then he will not get elected because people prefer the old regime.
Right.
But a Turncourt is essentially saying that a shift in people's thinking.
And that is what happened in France. They didn't know it would happen, but it happened in France.
Right.
And in the meantime, as you say, Bernie Sanders is almost leading, but he's not leading yet. He's just leading in some parties. And if you go the totals, Clinton's at 40%, Bernie Sanders at 25%. But of course, he's getting a lot of
I think it's a little
attention.
More closer than that. Yeah.
A lot of attention exactly. since the debate has been getting more attention.
And the most significant thing is money, because money is such a huge component to elections. Mm-hmm. Bernie Sanders is able to raise so much money, but he's not raising it through the big banks. He's not raising it through Wall Street like Hillary Clinton is doing. So that speaks much more volume, because he's just able to raise a huge amount of money from with the average dollar amount being $26.
From regular people.
Regular people.
On
there
the
is
streets.
A shift in the paradigm.
And that is also a good example here that you find out in Africa right now. In Tanzania, for instance, they have elections coming up. Mm. And the main opposition guy used to be in the ruling party, Chama cha Mapinduzi, for so many years, 40 years. And then all of a sudden, he decided he's going to join the opposition. Now, this guy's a Turncourt, but at the same time, he has a lot of support. And at the same time, you see in Uganda, we have another example in Uganda, Amama Mbabazi. He used to be a prime minister in the ruling party.
Okay.
Now, he's has his own opposition party and is getting his support. Mm. So I think, as you say, in some places, it could not be a bad thing. Maybe it can be change that people want to see.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, is what you want to see, what you want to do. But also, what about your personal friends? Example, I'm your friend, and I'm all of a sudden decided to turn my way out from you. Just saying, is that still going to be something you can respect and say, hey, oh, you think he's just a traitor and you don't want to deal with it?
Well, if we're talking about the term turncoat from the references that I'm aware of, it's usually about groups of people who are changing. So, and one of the things that is so interesting about that is when we see groups, massive amounts of people changing their minds, it's not usually every single mind that is changing individually
for individual reasons. Most of the time, it's something called groupthink. And groupthink is very popular in today, especially with the rise of social media. And people are essentially looking for ways to feel about something. So let's say Bruce Jenner comes out. So essentially, some people might feel like, okay, that's whatever. But if they go on Twitter and see everyone attacking him, they're going to start to sway their thinking. So that's when groupthink becomes a problem.
Thank you, Caleb. This is Let's Talk, and we're discussing Tan Court. A reminder, tonight, Let's Talk, we're discussing Tan Court. So back to you guys in studio. As I said prior, General Colin Powell, at some point, he was called a Tan Court. But it was just of him speaking his mind. As you said, he decided that, you know what? Right. I'm going to support Obama regardless, although he was not a Democrat, and he's not a Democrat today.
Right.
But he decided, I'm going to support this guy, and he threw his support. But that's a tough thing to do, too.
It is tough. It is tough, especially something like that. Political, that is tough.
Because it's political.
Yes.
And you know you have your people around you, and they're all looking at you like, what is he talking about, you know?
You're a traitor.
You're a traitor. Exactly. That's what the term will come from there. He's got a traitor.
Exactly.
We can't deal with him anymore.
He's disloyal to his party.
Exactly. Although he's not saying he's switching parties, but maybe in his heart he's switching. We don't know.
Exactly.
And that's very tough.
But he had his reasons, though.
Exactly.
He had his reasons.
And he stood by it. So does it show you that it is very hard sometimes to accept people when they think you are a Tan Court?
Oh, yes, very hard. It's very hard, I think, to even change your mind and go to another side.
Right.
Depending on what it is.
Exactly.
Depending on what it is. You know, I'm thinking of even in the work world, think about when you work for an agency and you're in one department,
mm-hmm.
then you move to another department.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people say, oh, you're a traitor.
Exactly.
You left us and you went to another department. I've heard that a lot. That's why I mentioned
it. Oh, okay. Talking from experience, right?
Well, not necessarily experience, but I've heard other people say.
And I think even Elvin, you can talk about this, especially in our politics in Africa. We know when people have this one party they believe, it's hard to find them switching to another party. But it happens. A good example in Tanzania right now, they have a former prime minister who was a loyal and a loyalist to this party, CCM, which is the incumbent party. He grew up in that party, became a prime minister, rose to the ranks. And finally, he decided to leave that party and joined the opposition.
Interesting.
And to run for the presidency.
Wow. That's big.
That's big, right?
That's big. You have a lot of courage to do that.
Exactly.
Right?
It takes a lot of courage. So how do you think we can still find people doing this in our generation? I don't know what you think for your own part, but it's not an easy thing to do, but it happens, and people do this all the time.
Right.
In political parties, in soccer teams, mm-hmm. you find one guy playing for this team, and the next thing you know is another team. And they're like, what is going on here?
True, very true.
So what do you think? Is this something that we could see happening and maybe people losing friends, losing family, losing, I don't know, business interests, as you say,
right.
because just you decided to do that?
I think, you know, if you look at the decision, if you're making a decision to move, you know, if it's a strategic decision for you, your family and your interests, you know, economically, politically, you know, you have to make the decision, you know, like the outcome might not be
the way you want it to
be. Might not be the right outcome. People are going to, you know, some people might be brushed the wrong way, but you have to make, you know, the move, you know, like when LeBron went to Miami.
Good point.
I'm telling you, remember
what
happened?
Anybody's not going to be happy about
yeah.
it.
Right.
Very good
but
point.
Yes, good point at that
right.
time.
So. That's right.
Cleveland went crazy,
That's
went on
true.
Fire.
How
they
he,
burned his jersey.
How could he have done that?
Exactly.
How could he leave us?
He's again, our own son.
And what was he called? A traitor.
A traitor.
Right.
But he did what he had to do.
Yeah,
that's
and
right.
he got
to get his ring, right?
And then he came back.
That's true. But you know, you have to be strong to do that. Think about all the people who were against him.
Uh-huh.
So many people.
A lot of people in his hometown were so mad against him.
You
they didn't want to hear LeBron's name.
Yes.
When he went back there to play, they booed at him.
That's right.
No, they accepted him with open arms because they wanted...
No, I'm saying when he was playing for Miami, playing his hometown.
Yeah. Right, absolutely.
They booed at him. Absolutely. They didn't want to see him anymore.
You're right.
But guess what? He's now another hometown hero.
Of course. And again, he had reasons.
He had reason to do what he did, yeah.
No one really knows, of course, exactly, but he had his reasons.
So it's not always a bad thing if people call you Tancourt. There may be a reason that you're doing what you're doing, and maybe it's for the best of you or for your life.
Right.
So we're learning something here.
Very true. But why do people think it's a bad thing then?
Exactly.
If someone calls you a Tancourt, you're going to feel a little bad.
Exactly.
You know, I turn my back on my party or my team or my friends. It's not a bad thing, though.
It's not.
Because, again, you have reasons.
People get disappointed. People are always going to be disappointed. They always want you to do what they want to do. Or, you know, so when you're making the decision, you can't always think about how it's going to affect everyone else.
Very true.
Right. Because it's at the end of the day, it's your decision, your career, your business, your political agenda. So.
Very true.
Your
very
life.
True.
Exactly. Everything.
Look, your life, right. Is that being selfish?
I don't know. Is it being
selfish? Think so.
Maybe
I don't
not.
Think so.
I don't think so.
I don't think so. You have to look out for yourself, right?
But it's being strong, is that what
I'm saying? Oh, it's being very strong.
You can't just do it, you know?
You can't just do it.
You got to be strong. Okay, you're tuned to Let's Talk, a program of the Voice of America's Africa Service. It comes to you Mondays at 17:30 Universal Time, right here on the Africa Service of the Voice of America. I'm in our Washington studio with Kathy Stanley and Alvin Singano. Back in a moment. Welcome back. This is Let's Talk, and I'm your host, Sunday Shomari. Now, as you said, guys, it's not always a bad thing. But Kathy, how would you convince a friend of yours, like your own friend, like, you know what, if one day you decide that you're not on my team, you're turning your back on me, I'll be okay. Really? Oh, your own family member, or your friend, or your daughter, your son, whoever.
Right.
Do you think it's easy to accept that it's going to be okay?
I mean, easy for me to accept?
Yeah, to accept that.
Well, no, but in a way, again, just like we were saying earlier, you got to think about yourself and what's the best thing for you. So if it's the best thing for me, then I'm going to have to go with it, and that person's going to have to understand.
And if it's a friend of yours who decided to turn back on you, how about that?
If a friend decided to turn their back on me, that's kind of hard to accept.
That's I know, right?
You mean like a best friend?
Yeah, like a best friend, yeah.
Oh, that's hard to accept. But then I'm going to have to think about, well, what are their reasons? And I'm going to have to really search my soul and say, okay, then they have their reasons. And if I have my reasons, they have their reasons. And there's nothing you can do, right? But accept it.
Okay,
so
maybe you will accept it. Let me ask Alvin. Maybe this is from the woman's point of view. I don't understand. Let's see
what about
a man's point of view.
You know, we're strong.
What about you, brother? You have your friend. You say, we are brothers. We are friends. And all of a sudden, this friend of yours is doing something you never expected.
Right.
Going totally against you, saying things you never expected, and you thought you and him had the same thinking. And all of a sudden, this guy is not. And he's leaving your team, moving to the other team. You know, there are those, like, brotherhoods and stuff. We're friends with this group. And all of a sudden, this guy's not in this group. He's in another group.
It's going to be hard.
Yeah, how do you think you're going to take it as a man?
It's hard. It hurts. You know, you can be disappointed. You know, but at the end of the day, you know, I try to understand and learn from the experience. And try to figure out, why do they do that? What were their motives, intentions, you know? And then from my perspective, you know, I learned to let people go. If you want to move on and do, you know, It's cool.
That's a good point.
Right.
You know how they say if a person walks out of your life, let them walk because they really weren't supposed to be there.
Really?
Have you ever heard that?
Yeah, I've heard that.
Right.
It was not meant to be. That's what
right,
I heard.
Exactly.
Let it go. But man, I'm hurting. You know?
It's definitely hard. There's no doubt about it. Yeah.
Yeah, because like a good example is like when you get married. For us, we're married, you know. Your boys are coming to you. Really? You decided now you're out of the bachelor's club?
They tell you
it's a big deal because you're out of the bachelor's club. And this means if you guys are used to hang out at night,
every night, every weekend,
watching football, watching soccer, drinking beer, doing whatever,
right.
That is not going to happen no more.
That's true.
Because you're not in the bachelor's club. So you're like, oh, we miss somebody here. They're going to miss you. Your boys will
miss
you. And you're like, you know what? I'm going to miss you guys too.
But that's not being a traitor.
No, not being a traitor.
No, it's not.
It's just you're cutting those ties.
Right, exactly.
That we have back in the days before we got married.
Your life is changing.
Like, yes.
That's it.
There's changes there.
Life changes. Right.
But some people don't accept changes. You know that?
Right.
That is true. But in a way, it's a good thing. Isn't it a good thing, you think?
I realize that there's always going to be backlash, whatever decision you make, whether it's, you know, moving forward in your career, some people are going to be unhappy, some people are going to be happy. So there's always going to be some kind of backlash. That's the word I was looking for earlier.
Oh, okay.
That's what I'm looking for, okay.
So, you know, so you got to wait out and see, and then as long as it works for you. If you're getting married, man, as much as...
You'll miss your brother,
right?
But it's all right.
You're getting the family, and, you know?
You got to support your brother.
Right.
Because people, man, I mean, I've seen people saying that I've been married, but my friends want me to hang out every night, maybe every weekend with them. And that's not going to fly with my family.
No, you can't do that every
weekend. So when you tell them, I am married, I cannot hang out as I used to back in the days, some of them get upset. Especially like the ones you had if it was a best friend. And your best friend is still single. What happens?
Your best friend's going to have to realize. He's going to have to look. He's going to have to share you a little bit. Am I right? Is that a good word?
Maybe.
You have to share you a little. But, of course, your family and your wife comes first.
Right.
And, again, it's all about change.
Exactly. And when it comes to that, some people don't accept changes. They don't take changes well very much. Maybe I should say that. So it becomes a problem. So that's what people.
But you're not
face.
A turncoat.
You're a turncoat, yeah. You're not a turncoat. But some people want to label you as one,
exactly.
And you're not, you know?
It's totally different.
You've just evolved in a different set of life, and things have changed, and you don't want to hang with these people no more.
Exactly. Totally different.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Thanks, guys. This is Let's Talk, and we're discussing turncoat. You tune to Let's Talk, a program of the Voice of America's Africa Service. It comes to you Mondays at 17:30 Universal Time, right here on the Africa Service of the Voice of America. It's time now for the unusual story of the week.
A man and his friend are both under arrest after they broke into the man's neighbor's apartment and swapped out their furniture. The neighbors, a couple, returned home to find a number of their belongings, including a love seat, a matching couch, a mattress, pots, pans, and a number of other things were gone. And in their place was a recliner and a TV stand. The couple also found a pizza receipt on the floor that had the name of one of the men who broke in. So police were quickly able to track them down. The man living next to the couple also left a traffic ticket in the apartment containing all of his contact information. He told police he had heard his neighbors talking about moving and thought they had just abandoned the apartment with all the stuff in it. Both men pled not guilty to residential burglary and are awaiting their sentencing.
Thanks, and that's it for our show on Turncoat. A big thank you to my guests. And in the studio, thanks to Kathy Stanley. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Sunday. Always good to be here.
All right. And also thank you, Mr. Alvin Singano.
Thank you very much, sir. It's a
pleasure. All right. Thank you so much. And, of course, our producer is Jackson Mvunganyi. Please send in your comments and experiences. Our email address is letstalk@voanews.com. You can also call us here at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. 205-9942 and leave us a message. Thanks for tuning in and join us again next Monday at 17:30 UTC for the exciting edition of Let's Talk. Our topic next week will be beauty versus brains. Oh, don't forget to tune in. Yes, interesting. Don't forget to tune in Tuesdays for another discussion program, Health Chat. Host Lino Madu and her guest physician discuss a health issue of interest to you. That's Health Chat, Tuesdays at 17:30 Universal Time, right here on the Africa Service of the Voice of America. From Washington, this is Sunday Shomari. See you next Monday. Ciao.